Ryan. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. This is the Monday version of our show. Thrilled that you're listening. It should be a good one. Hello, Wendy.
Hello, Bill.
Good weekend all the way around?
It was a pretty great weekend. We had some, it was the last gasp of summer, wasn't it?
I wouldn't mind a few more gasps along the way. I'm optimistic there might be another one or two, maybe, possibly.
I don't know. My mindset is already on fall and sweaters and pot roast, and I don't want to go back to 88 degrees, which it's going to be again at the end of the week.
Yeah, yeah. Did you watch last night's Emmy Award broadcast?
I watched the highlights. I don't know why. I was not excited about it.
No, not at all.
I don't know why.
Well, here's what part of it was. I watched it with Terry, who watched all the shows that won things. Like that Big Little Lies I wanted to see, and I watched the first episode. And I guess from what everybody tells me, it really kicked in on episode two or three, because the first episode to me was just them complain. It was like, remember on Designing Women, the whole show was just women just sitting around complaining about stuff?
Yeah.
That's what this reminded me of. But evidently, it got really good after that first episode, so now I'm kicking myself that I didn't watch more.
Well, you still can.
I still can. Yeah, it's still available. And then Handmaid's Tale didn't look like much to me, but boy, did it do well last night.
Never even heard of it, I got to honest with you.
It's gotten a lot of attention, and everybody I know who has watched it has loved it. So at some point, that's also on the list.
And Terry watched that as well?
Yeah. Everything that won awards last night, she saw, and then the shows that I watch, McHale's Navy, I Dream of Jeannie, they didn't win anything. The Munsters, nothing.
Although the shows we watched did not win anything like This Is Us. I know Sterling K. Brown, is that his name?
I think so, yeah.
I love him.
Yeah.
I love him. I should know his name if I love him.
Now, did you see what happened with his speech?
I saw all the speeches. Yeah. I saw the monologue, which was surprising to me.
Surprising why?
Because Sean Spicer was there.
All right. Let's for people who didn't see it, here's what happened. He sets up a joke, and then Sean Spicer comes out, and the joke is how many people are watching the broadcast. So he said there's only one man who really will know how many people are watching, and if we broke in. And then Sean Spicer comes out in the same portable podium that he's portrayed on Saturday Night Live, and he does a joke that it's the largest watched broadcast in Emmy history, both in the studio and at home, which we've all seen in politics.
Right.
So then immediately people are online going, oh, don't bring Sean Spicer out. Don't make friends with the enemy and stuff like that. But I thought Sean Spicer had a very good sense of humor about it.
Absolutely.
Most of the people there really got a big laugh out of it.
He looked very uncomfortable and very nervous to me, if you want to know the truth. He was there to basically deliver one line.
Yeah, he was the punchline to a joke, but he knew that.
Right? But
absolutely knew it. Now, remember last week when I said he was on with Stephen Colbert?
Yes.
And I said, I feel guilty in saying this. He hasn't won me over, but I ended up liking him, which I never thought I would do. But he kind of admitted that, hey, like it or lump it, my job is to go out and echo the words of the president. Whether I believe it or not, that's what my job requirement is.
Yeah, but to me, there's no integrity in taking a job that you don't believe in.
Of course.
So that's where, I mean, I never disliked him. I mean, he cracked me up. I think we've heard so many things from people who knew him before taking this position that he's a great guy.
Right. But doesn't this say, because he knows when he gets the call from one of the writers who says, hey, we wrote this thing, would you be interested in doing this? He knows he's the punchline to a joke there, and yet he did it. In a room full of Hollywood elite, he wheeled himself out with the podium and became the punchline of a joke, and had a good time doing it.
I loved looking at the expression on Melissa McCarthy's face when he rolled out, because there was some embarrassment. There was some, like, boy, you're a good sport. Yeah. It was really cute.
Yeah. I also have to say this. I don't know that it made it into the highlights reel, but somebody early on mentioned how diverse an evening it was, both with the nominees, and then it ended up being with the winners, too. They really were of all different backgrounds, culturally, sexually, you name it. And that was a good thing to see.
That really was, truly. And I know you love Stephen Colbert. I don't dislike him. I don't watch him on a regular basis. I know what I'm going to get when I hear about Stephen Colbert. But to me, it was overkill with the President Trump jokes. It was too much. They were funny.
There were a bunch.
To me, it was just like, oh, come on already.
Not just with the jokes, but sometimes in the excuse me, the victory speeches they'd mention.
Yeah, everybody, you know, but he set the tone with his monologue to say it was okay to bring that up.
I actually thought, I did like an over-under in my head of how many times Donald Trump would be mentioned in some way, shape, or form. I thought it would have been a slightly higher number, not just from Stephen Colbert hosting, but from other people who would want to make a quick political statement about the state of the country right now. You got a little bit of it, sometimes subtle, sometimes not. You know, Alec Baldwin, you know, just kind of went right at him.
That was great, though. Short, sweet, done. And I'm not saying Stephen Colbert's stuff wasn't funny.
Yeah.
But he has a show for that.
He does, but like, all right, so here's what's happening now behind the scenes. ABC has the Academy Awards. So who do they have host the Academy Awards? Because it's ABC's choice. They have Jimmy Kimmel, who's their 10:30 talk show host. So CBS has the Emmys. So who do they go for? They go for Colbert. So it's kind of a built-in promotion. Even if I'm sure you noticed this throughout the evening, CBS shows had a lot more presenters than any other network.
I didn't pay attention to that, but you're right.
They had a lot of that. So it is like a built-in, it's kind of a publicity circle spinning around a little bit. But he could have done a couple of other things. I don't know, if you're Stephen Colbert, you go with your strengths, and some of that is politics,
right.
And boy, has it been in the news, so why not, right?
I just, you know, it was, and like I said, I thought they were funny, but I thought it was overkill, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Ratings not good.
I think that goes more to the fact that most of the shows that were up for a lot of awards weren't America's favorite television shows. They were more kind of inside obscure shows. More obscure shows. Like you just mentioned, you never even heard of The Handmaid's Tale.
Right, but This Is Us was Network and Stranger Things. There were more shows this year that I've heard of. Not that one.
But the shows that were your traditional network fare, like Modern Family was only nominated for one or two things, right?
That's getting old to me, too.
It's the last season. So it's only got one more season in it.
Because that's not as funny as it used to be, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I still think The Middle is a funnier show than Modern Family.
And that never gets recognized.
I know.
For anything. It doesn't. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more to discuss. If you want to jump in, you can. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, one more thing about the Emmys, and then we can do other things. But it seems like every time there's an award show, they do this segment called In Memoriam, which shows all the people that have died over the year. And then the next day, or sometimes just minutes after it airs, people go, oh, well, you put that guy in, but you didn't put her in. You put her in, you didn't put these guys in.
Every year.
But this year, there is that same debate, but with good reason, I will explain. They left out some major names, as they always do. Aaron Moran was not mentioned.
Unacceptable.
Joni from Happy Days. Harry Dean Stanton, who just died on Friday, but did some notable TV work over the years.
He was not mentioned.
Yeah. What a good actor. I always thought of Harry Dean Stanton that there was a certain kind of part in a movie, and if Dennis Hopper wasn't interested, Harry Dean Stanton just got the job all the time, right? It was always one of those two guys playing
right.
The alcoholic uncle who's just trying to figure out his life.
He did not look very good in the last season of Twin Peaks. He was in it and was looking very old and ailing to me.
Charlie Murphy, who was a regular on Chappelle's Show, Eddie Murphy's brother,
oh,
who died
right.
last year, was not mentioned. Dick Gregory, a frequent guest on our show, not mentioned.
Was he a big TV guy, though?
He was in the 60s. He was on like Merv Griffin and Dinah Shore and Mike Douglas. He was on all the time. So you could certainly make an argument that he could have been included in this. But even though they left out those names and a couple of others, they did mention Roger Ailes, who had a scandal or two. So people were going, wait, you can throw Roger Ailes in there. He's the guy who was like the architect of Fox News.
He had a lot to do with television, quite honestly.
All right, so without a doubt he did, but I'm thinking if you only have X amount of slots to fill, do you fill them with a guy who was kind of a polarizing figure?
I wouldn't, but more of a household name than some of the others.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Erin Moran is unforgivable.
Yeah, that's
she
one
made
you
her whole.
Thought...
That's her whole life was on TV.
Right. That's a little bit of a surprise,
yeah.
Isn't it? That's a little bit of a surprise. So I don't know. I always wonder whose decision that is as to who gets in and who does not get in. And without a doubt, I don't remember any of these where somebody doesn't say the next day, wait, you didn't put him in, her in, what? So this one with Roger Ailes throws a little extra twist into it, you know, just a little. All right. The other thing that we needed to bring up was the interpreter in Florida. Did you see this interpreter situation? All right. I'm trying to think if I can. Yeah, we can do this in 7 or 8 minutes. All right. As Hurricane Irma charged toward Florida, officials in a county on the state's west coast held a news conference to inform residents of mandatory evacuation orders. The woman who was speaking there is a woman named Robin DiSabatino. She's with the Board of County Commissioners. She says, we just need to be safe. She's letting people know. Now, to her left is an interpreter. A guy is interpreting everything she's saying. The problem is he wasn't very good. So residents who were deaf or hard of hearing, as Ms. Sabatino spoke, heard a message about pizza and then about bear monsters.
All right.
Instead of about a hurricane, he was signing things that had to do with pizza and bears and monsters. Or bear
monsters.
Who vets
these people?
I can't figure that out. Manatee County Emergency Operations. Who is the person? Oh, this was a text that came in. A tweet. I'm sorry. Hey, Manatee County Emergency Operations, who is the person you're using as a sign language interpreter? A woman wrote, this person is definitely not qualified. The interpreter often appeared unsure of himself as he paused frequently. His bright yellow shirt, which is a no-no for light-skinned signers who typically wear dark clothing to help so that their hands stand out while interpreting. I appreciate you for getting an interpreter. However, he's wearing a bright yellow shirt and no one could see his hands. Another tweeter said, this is atrocious. Mr. Rosenblum, who is deaf, said through an interpreter in a phone interview with the association considered that they considered what happened a violation of the American with Disabilities Act. We believe that Manatee County failed to provide information to the deaf and hard of hearing community to the same extent that it provided all their others. So they're furious, and rightfully so.
They should be. This happened at another major thing, too, and I'm trying to find it by Googling.
Well, there was a year or so ago, and I don't remember what the event was. Somebody was adding things that they weren't saying, which I guess is kind of the same thing is happening here. There was no mention. The original speaker, Robin DiSabatino, had no mention whatsoever of pizza or bear monsters. But if you followed the interpreter, she did.
She didn't say, you know, order your pizzas now because delivery may take longer.
No.
The bear monsters I have no excuse for.
No.
It's bearing down like a monster, maybe?
I think you're being polite. I'm not sure that was the wording on it. But imagine if you are a deaf person relying on this to get your information, and it's so inaccurate at a crucial time as a hurricane is quickly approaching.
Importantly, too, we've got the UN Security Council meeting. Think about all those interpreters who are trying to, you know, translate things into Spanish and English and French. And
Ryan, I think about that all the time because some of those symbols are so just if you use the slightest motion the wrong way, it can mean an incredibly different thing.
Yeah.
Even the smallest detail could be the worst, you know?
It could be the next nuclear war, right?
I know.
That's terrible. What, this whole world is going to hell in a handbasket. It really is.
And quickly. That's the way to do it. Do it quickly. All right. In a little while, Ryan with the news, and then Tom Skilling, not the Tom Skilling. Yeah, the Tom Skilling. And I'll explain why. Should I do that now or when we have him on?
We can do it later.
Do it later? All right.
Just, it's always a pleasure to talk to Tom Skilling.
Aside from the storms, the incredible storms that were experienced in this country a week or so ago.
And that are still coming.
That are still coming.
More hurricanes on the way.
There was a little side story about Tom that we explored on the stream.
Which I didn't know.
And who better to talk about it than Tom? And we'll get to that in a little bit. Then, the roaches. That's right, the roaches.
I have to give you credit for turning me on to the roaches.
You were not aware of the roaches?
No, and then as I was doing research over the weekend, I'm shocked that I wasn't aware of them.
They're so good. So Lucy and Susie Roach will be with us. That's at 11:05. And then our friend Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune at 11:35. So stick around a lot ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Changing the weather. Ryan, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Really quick. We were just talking about an interpreter who didn't do a very good job during the hurricanes last week, and we were trying to come up with where this has happened recently in the past or fairly recently. It turns out several texters knew it was at Nelson Mandela's funeral. That's where it was.
All right. We need to talk to Tom Skilling about something that you brought up that I knew nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
So the legendary Tom Skilling on the line with us right now. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm anxious to hear what you didn't know about me. Happy Monday to you guys.
Happy Monday to you, Tom.
You as well.
It's a gorgeous, you know, this is the week that autumn arrives astronomically. So we're 5 days from the autumnal equinox around here. And what a beautiful period of weather it is. It's been, what a great weekend.
Tom, I'm sure I'm not the first person to say this to you, but last week, as the storms were just tearing through the south, I almost felt guilty because it was so nice here and so awful there. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I do indeed, Bill. I'll tell you, we've got another catastrophe unfolding in the Caribbean and the tropical Atlantic. That area has been just decimated by these storms. The U.S. and British Virgin Islands have been leveled by Irma, and now they've got Maria, which is deepening rapidly and headed that way, and it looks like Puerto Rico may be in for a direct blow, too, which would be the first time in 19 years that a major hurricane has made landfall in Puerto Rico. So, you know, it's amazing we could be sitting here in such beautiful weather, and as you say, Bill, such tragedy unfolding elsewhere. You know, they still don't have electricity, water in the British Virgin Islands.
Yeah.
And many people are living in damaged homes. So the question becomes, where do you offer shelter as another 150-mile-per-hour plus hurricane bears down on that region? And in Puerto Rico, they may see flooding rains of up to 25 inches. So it's been
something. Awful.
I know this is hurricane season, but it seems odd that these are such powerful storms coming back to back to back. Is this something unique to this season?
Well, I'll tell you, Wendy, the ocean temperatures are warm, and we're right between La Nina and El Nino. We're in what's called an ENSO quiet period. That's interestingly, that event on the other side of the in the equatorial Pacific, when you have a quiet period there and you don't have an El Nino or a La Nina, the winds over the Atlantic basin aloft tend to be light. And so these storms, you marry that with the fact that they've got warm ocean waters, which fuel these storms. And it means there are no upper winds or wind shear that tear these things apart, and they can develop unfettered. So, you know, just the marriage of a couple of conditions, namely warm ocean waters and lack of wind shear through the atmosphere. And so the season has taken off. We've had twice the climatological average on named storms out in the Atlantic. We've had 13 named storms. And seven is average by this time.
Wow.
So it's Tom, when this happens, does that say to you and your business, uh-oh, look out, if it's like that this year, it's going to get worse next year or the year after, or is there no pattern at all in terms of that?
Well, not necessarily, Bill, because I'll tell you, it's rare to have a sitting so perfectly between a La Nina and an El Nino. Normally you have one or the other going out in the Pacific, and when that happens, that tends to affect the upper-level winds, particularly if it's an El Nino. We have what looks to be a La Nina developing. That's a cooling of the equatorial Pacific, and that has some implications for our winter this year, if that's true. There's a volatility to winters in Chicago and the Midwest related to La Ninas, and there's also, we found from in-house work, that about 60% of the winters have more rain and or snow in La Nina winters. And the temperatures bobble around pretty dramatically because you can get Arctic outbreaks in a La Nina winter, but they tend to oscillate with periods of mild weather coming in off the Pacific. So you get big temperature swings in La Nina winters sometimes in this area. And that'll be something we watch in the months ahead as we get closer and closer to winter.
Well, I got to tell you, Tom, you're the only man I trust when it comes to weather, really and truly.
Oh, thank you, Wendy. I'm telling you something. And the check is in the mail.
All right. So, Tom, last week, as we're talking about the weather, and Wendy said, as she just told you,
yeah,
there's only one guy to trust, and that's Tom Skilling.
Yeah.
And I brought up a name from your past.
Yes.
And that name, that guy's name is Albert the Alley Cat.
Albert the Alley Cat. Oh, yeah. One of the prouder moments in my broadcast career. You know, just... Yeah.
Well, we were warned by Steve Bertrand not to bring this up to you, and we don't mean any disrespect, but I didn't know Albert the Alley Cat was on a station in Milwaukee with you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Believe me, I'm not sensitive about it at all. You know, I'm 65 years old. I look back on the career, and I think, hey, this is something not everybody did. It, by the way, was not the way I would have programmed a weather show. But, I didn't come along one day and say, hey, you know, to make my life complete and my weather programs more complete, I've got to have a puppet on it. But, and, you know, when I went to school up at the University of Wisconsin, I used to have my fellow students in from the Milwaukee area saying, as I was working on television out in Madison in my early years, hey, what you need is a puppet on the air. And I said, you have got to be kidding me. It is not what I need. Where in the world did you get that idea? And then they briefed me on Albert the Alley Cat.
Who preceded you, correct? Albert was there before you got there.
Yeah. Albert had been teamed up with a very popular weather forecaster in Milwaukee on television, Ward Allen. And they had... Apparently, some program director back in the 1960s thought, hey, you know, this was a period of gimmickry. Some would say it continues, but I mean, in those days, gimmickry included putting a puppet on the weather show. And so they pulled Albert off a kid's show, put him on the evening newscast with alongside Ward Allen, and this created something of an institution. I mean, people loved Albert. All the surveys showed that he was the most popular on-air personality in Milwaukee.
Oh, my God.
So, I was the last person you would ever think would be teamed up with him. But I had moved from Madison, Wisconsin, down to Jacksonville, Florida, and worked down in Jacksonville for a year. And I was so anxious to get back to the Midwest where we had real seasons and
yeah,
it snowed part of the year. You know, I missed that.
Tom, what would happen, though, if the weather was awful? Let's say it was incredibly extreme like we had last week. Would Albert the Alley Cat still come on and talk about that or not?
Well, you know, here's what happened. Albert would be on at the beginning. We'd chat a little bit. And oftentimes his function was to promote bazaars and fundraising, you know, public service events. People would knit him little outfits and promoting a church bazaar or something that's going on. And then at the end of the show, he had a joke he would throw in there. And he would read the current conditions during the show. So here you had Mr. Meteorology sitting next to Albert talking about jet streams and dew points. It must have been riotous TV, honestly, because you know how seriously I take the weather.
Yes.
And that never let up. But it was interesting. The American Meteorological Society, of which I'm a member and I'm very proud to be a member, didn't care for that and told me that my seal of approval would be pulled if Albert wasn't gone. And when I was hired there, I got a call one day down in Jacksonville from WITI in Milwaukee, who's now one of our Tribune stations, by the way.
Yeah.
And they said, hey, we saw you on a tape. We were looking at a news anchor, and we saw your weather on there. Would you come up and talk to us about possibly doing the weather? So I did. The idea of getting back to the Midwest was a thrill. And I said, they said, look, Albert's going back to the kids' show from which he came. We want a more serious approach to the weather. But then the mail started coming in bags up there. I remember the news director's office had these mail sacks stacked from the floor to the ceiling, and people were writing saying, how dare you, don't you dare, this is like killing the family pet. Picking him up. So Albert probably extended Albert's career another several years, And I worked next to him. And, you know, frankly, as I say, it's not the way I would have put a weather show together, but I got a kick out of the reaction of people too, Albert.
And it probably prepared you for anyone else you'd ever work with again in your career.
You know, Wendy, I'll tell you, they kid me here. When I started here, they would kid me and say, well, I think it's time we bring a puppet in. You know? And I said, no, not a, once in a professional career is enough, you know. But
didn't Channel 9 have Garfield Goose doing political commentary for a little while, a couple of months?
Not on the weather, but... No? But, you know, look at the role of Pakukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Sure.
I mean, you know, it's really, when you look at broadcast history, this isn't unusual at all.
Well, Tom, I don't know if you'll remember this. I told Wendy that on the Today Show for a couple of years, they had on J. Fred Muggs. He was the co-host, and he was a monkey.
Right. So, you know, I mean, and, you know, you got to remember, in those days, we didn't have satellites. We didn't have radar. So your programming people were always looking for some kind of hook that would, grab an audience.
Right.
Grab an audience's attention. And so this is the way it was done in Milwaukee. And we'd go out on parades together. And the fellow who did, Albert, was a guy by the name of Jack Dublon. He would come in, and they had a little set that was built. You know, our new set was always built to accommodate an Albert. And Jack would sit down there in, and do Albert below, out of view, on the new set. And his job by day was he would, auction off estates after people had died. And then he would come in the evening and do the Albert character. So, at any rate, it was, you know, I look back at that and I think, gosh, you know, at the time, I was happy as a young person to have a job.
Right, of course.
And, but I'll tell you something, and I've always been very proud of the field of meteorology. I think we have a lot to celebrate in our field, and it would never do anything to harm its reputation or anything like that. I loved meteorology since I was a kid.
Right.
But it was interesting.
And I guess Albert had a twin brother. Do you remember Albert's twin brother's name?
No, I didn't know that.
Filbert.
Filbert the alligator.
It was an alley cat, not an alligator.
I keep thinking alligator.
Well, I never met the brother then, so that's news to me. But I'll tell you, it was completely harmless.
Of course.
And it was a lot of fun. And the relationship between the audience with the Albert character was kind of endearing. I found it very nice. As a young 25-year-old trying to make his way in the competitive world of broadcasting, it probably didn't do me any harm.
No, absolutely not.
Standing next to the most identifiable and best-loved on-air personality on the Milwaukee television.
That is crazy to hear you say that.
When was the last time you saw him, Tom? Have you seen Albert at all in the last 15 or 20 years?
No, Jack Dublon passed away some number of years ago.
Oh.
And, no, I didn't. And shortly afterwards, they did retire Albert to the kids show.
Yeah.
But he survived, I think, through a weathercaster who followed me.
Yeah.
And it was a passing era in podcasting, you know.
Well, we're glad you're solo now, Tom.
Yes, it's much better.
Thank you, Wendy. I hope I didn't disappoint you and when you learn that, but I...
No, not at all.
And I must say, it's kind of odd of all the people that could have been teamed with Albert that somebody who takes weather so seriously.
Right.
But they let me, I remember the news consultants always would get upset about jets using the term jet stream and dew point, and they were frightened to death that I was going to scare people away with stuff like that.
That it was over their heads, Tom? Did they think those terms were just too highfalutin for the average viewer? Yeah.
You know, they condescended toward the viewer, I always thought. I thought, you know, we're a lot smarter than they give us credit for, you know,
yeah.
We viewers. And I thought, you know, this always bothered me. Now, my word, they want you on the top of the show if it's raining or, you know, if we got an inch of snow on the way and all the rest. It's a different world today than it was then. And I think sometimes we go overboard the other way.
Absolutely.
Now.
Tom, yes. Really quick, we have to bring up one more thing really quickly. During the eclipse a few weeks ago, you made national news because of how emotional you are. But how could you not be? That for you, that was like one of the most unforgettable days of your life, I bet.
Oh, Bill, it was amazing. You know, it was hot as Hades down there. I mean, the crew and I were just burning up. You were so excited by this, and there were all kinds of Chicagoans down there. We were about 10 miles south of Carbondale, and here I am on live television. I've not even brought myself to watch the tape of it, and I started descending into tears, and you're saying to yourself, come on, Skilling, get a hold of yourself. You're on live television, and men aren't supposed to do this.
Oh, that's a bunch of baloney.
Well, we've seen sportscasters, though, Tom, time and time again, when the team wins, the sportscasters melt. This was your World Series, your Super Bowl.
Well, you know, Bill, I've been amazed at the response to this. I had no idea that people would respond to it, but in the way they have, and everywhere I go, people say, "Oh, we saw you on the eclipse, and we loved the way you cried," and I was so embarrassed by it.
I didn't think I could love you any more than I already did, Tom, and that pushed me over the edge.
Well, I'll tell you, Wendy, it was amazing. You know, the first hour and 15 minutes, we had the little glasses where you were watching the disc come over. But about an hour and 15 minutes, 5 minutes from totality down there, boom, you go from day to night. The sky that is azure blue one moment turns black. The stars are invisible. It was an amazing moment. And I don't think I didn't hear a mean word from anybody who had traveled down there that whole 3 days. Everybody, it was like we were all in this together.
Sure.
There was something unifying about all of it. And as I look back on it, it was an extraordinary event. And I would highly recommend, you know, there's going to be another one in 2024 visible down there in Southern Illinois in its entirety again. And so 7 years from now, we'll get a rare opportunity to see it again. And I think it's really something we're seeing. I've seen science writers who have really seen these total eclipses who suggest it ought to be a national holiday so we can go out and see it.
Yep. You know, you had every right to be emotional, Tom, and the only bad tweet I read is from somebody called @AlbertTheAlleyCat in Wisconsin. They said it was too much for him, but everybody else loved it.
Well, Albert comes back from the dead, you know. I'll tell you something. It wasn't the way it was supposed to work out, I'll tell you, it was amazing. It was sure fun meeting a lot of folks who had traveled all that way with families. I mean, this turned out to be a family occasion down there. There were so many, parents there with their kids and all, and it was a sight to see, no question about it.
Well, thank you so much for making weather so exciting for the rest of us. And you keep up with your jet streams and everything else. We know
and
what you're saying.
Points. We love it.
My jet streams, my isodrosotherm analyses, we have so many fun words in meteorology, and they make perfect names for pets.
They sure do. It's Tom Skilling, everybody. He's the best. Tom, thanks for spending time with us. Have a great rest of the week.
Good to talk to you, Bill. And you too, Wendy. And guys, you keep on keeping on.
Thank
you,
sir.
Tom Skilling, everybody.
God, I love him.
He's the best. We will take a quick break. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Over the ground lies a mantle of white. A heaven, a diamond shines down through the night. Two hearts are thrilling in spite of the chill in the weather.
Now, this was the song that won you over.
Absolutely.
Right?
The harmonies are amazing. Got to tell you, I'm loving the accents, too.
Susie Roach joins us right now, and her daughter, Suzy, I'm sorry, I'm 301 now. I said your name incorrectly over 300 times. Suzy, I'm sorry. Suzy Roach is here, and her daughter, Lucy Wainwright Roach, are here. That song, by the way, one of my favorite Christmas carols of all time, and you guys did it in a way no one's ever done it before.
Yes, and it's especially great to hear it in September.
Right. It's coming.
Way before Christmas.
Far before.
That's all right. It's our favorite holiday anyway. What year was that recorded?
Oh,
ballpark.
I don't know. It's all a blur. It's got to be 20 years ago, at least.
at least. And your sister Maggie passed away in January. Very, very sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's very difficult. You know, we worked together for my whole life, and now she's not here. It's hard to really understand that. My brain is not accepting it.
And she started out the whole roaches scene, didn't she?
She was sort of the heart and soul, I would say. You know, she was my oldest sister, so she sort of, and she was a brilliant, you know, songwriter and musician.
What is it when siblings sing together? There's something going on with the vocal harmonies that no one else can achieve. You guys certainly pulled it off, but what's going on there, do you think?
Well, somebody once told me that you have the same shaped vocal cords. I don't know if that's true, but I think there's something also with the mother-daughter thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's something about being related.
Yeah.
Which you are now touring with your daughter. Lucy, nice to meet you.
Hi, nice to meet you.
It's kind of cool working with mom when your mom is a rock folk pioneer.
Yeah, that's what I call her. A rock folk pioneer.
Does she make you call her that, or is that a volunteer? It's all volunteer. All right. Yeah. That's excellent. Years ago, friends of my wife and I, Dan and Margaret, were getting married, and you and your sisters were their favorite band, and they sent you an invitation to attend the wedding and possibly perform if you were in the mood, never expecting to hear from you. And they got a response about a month later saying, if we weren't on tour and in another city, we'd be glad to be at the wedding and perform. Unfortunately, we're going to be in Seattle or whatever city you were in. But I just thought that was the nicest thing in the world, that you guys would respond and have a backup excuse already.
Yeah, well, you know, the people who have listened to our music, we have a very special relationship to. It's like, you know, because we're not big, huge stars. So
yeah,
it's people have to really seek it out. And it really, it's a very deep thing, you know, because a lot of people have been very affected by the music. And that's, you kind of wonder when you do these shows and make these records, does anybody, is anyone going to come, or is anybody hearing it? And they are. It's amazing.
And you'll be at the City Winery tomorrow night. It's Tuesday. Doors open at 6 p.m. Show starts at 8. And you guys, you and your sisters, your other sister, Terry, you began singing in church. Is that how this all got started?
Yeah. We sang in the choirs when we were kids. I mean, that's a long time ago now. Like, I'm old.
You're not that old. You're not that old. Lucy, your pedigree is amazing. Both your mom and dad, incredible artists with the music. Does that put a little extra pressure on you to do this, or does it make you want to shy away from it at some point in your life?
When I was younger, I wasn't interested at all, and I actually went to school to become a teacher.
Yeah.
And I did that for a couple of years, and then somehow I got sucked back into this. I think my mom would have liked me to be a lawyer or something that could pay for everyone else who's a musician.
Yeah. Yes, the day after she got her master's degree, she went on the road with Rufus, her brother, and my heart sank.
Oh,
I was
no.
Like, you got to be kidding me. But she has a beautiful voice, so what can you do?
I have an 18-year-old son who wants to be a musician, and I'm trying to tell him to get a backup plan just in case. Because really, not a lot of people buy records anymore. It's the tours that make your money.
Yeah, I know. When those CDs go, I don't know what we're going to do. That's really...
Right,
we count on our CDs,
but, yeah. But people are like soon going to be like, what's a CD?
I know.
Right, yeah, not far off. You have guitars. It'd be ridiculous if we didn't ask you to do a song or two. Is that possible? Could you do that? Yeah.
Well, we have two songs we were thinking of. One of them is a song about Chicago.
Oh, beautiful.
Would you like to hear that one?
Oh, very much, yeah.
Okay, great.
I wrote this song when I was working as a nanny in Chicago and spent 4th of July looking out the window of one of these big hotels downtown here. So that's what this song came from. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Isn't it fun? Still come out to see.
Chicago, you are mine tonight. Good night, Chicago.
Suzzy Roach and Lucy Wainwright Roach, her daughter. It's got to be so cool to hear your daughter singing as a musician. Wow, she's really good. But that's your daughter. She sings like an angel.
Yeah, I know. I know. She's always had a very angelic, pure voice. She's like that as a person, too.
If she didn't sing well, would you still talk to her?
I'm telling you, I told her, don't even do this. If
yeah,
you could
really?
Do anything else possible.
Really?
Only because it's a hard life, you know.
Yeah.
But it's also an amazing life because
yeah.
you're always traveling. I mean, look at this beautiful day here in Chicago. We get to come here. And
it's like the year-round here.
No,
it's always like
this. No, this is the right time to come here.
You think about it, though. We all like to tell stories. Bill and I work on the radio to be able to tell stories. You meet someone on the street. You talk to your friends. You're able to put it to music. So it has to be so rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. It's a very you have to give up a lot to do it, but it's a very special thing.
They will be appearing tonight at the City Winery. You can get there at
tomorrow
6.
Night.
I'm sorry.
Right?
Yes, Tuesday night. City Winery, 8 p.m. start. We're going to take a quick break, and will you grace us with another angelic song, please?
Sure.
All right, more coming up next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we are here with Suzzy Roach and her daughter, Lucy Wainwright. I am done talking for the day. Lucy Wainwright Roach, and they will be appearing at the City Winery tomorrow night, September 19th. 6 p.m. doors open, 8 p.m. start. We are so happy to have you here. And will you do another song for us?
Sure. This is a cover song by a band called The Beatles.
Nope.
Never heard of
Sorry.
Them.
Sorry.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Your day breaks, your mind aches, you find that all her words of kindness linger on when she no longer needs you. She wakes up, she makes up, she takes her time and doesn't feel she has to hurry. She no longer needs you, and in her eyes you see nothing. No sign of love behind the tears, cry for no one. A love that should have lasted years. You want her, you need her, and yet you don't believe her when she says her love is dead. You think she needs you. Ba 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 ba. And in her eyes you see nothing. No sign of love behind the tears, cry for no one. A love that should have lasted years. You stay home, she goes out. She says that long ago she knew someone, but now he's gone, she doesn't need him. Your day breaks, your mind aches. There will be times when all the things she said will fill your head. You won't forget her, and in her eyes you see nothing. No sign of love behind the tears, cry for no one. A love that should have lasted years.
I don't want you to stop.
That's so beautiful.
I really don't.
Oh, so beautiful. Who would you like to hear cover one of your songs?
Oh, wow. I don't know. I guess there's so many... young musicians right now,
yeah.
they're starting to cover Roach's songs.
Are they? Yeah.
And so I'll take anybody, anybody who wants to cover them.
Really? There's no one performer or band that you go, that now that would be something.
Well, it would be great, the Indigo Girls.
Yeah.
They do one of the Roach's songs. Actually, Lucy has been touring with them, and they do it with Lucy, the Hammond song, which is one of the Roach's favorite songs. And... if they recorded it, it would be amazing.
Oh, yeah, I hope so.
You know, they're great people. And we kind of feel like we, you know, we're pioneers that sort of, you know, we handed the torch over to other, you know, women singers.
Absolutely, you did.
And that's a great feeling, especially as I'm getting older, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, but it's particularly amazing to sing with Lucy because I never thought we would do this, and it's really fun.
You sound so beautiful. You guys just sound so incredible.
Do you miss doing the sound of a cockroach? Tiny Toon Adventures. Do you miss that?
That was fun.
I'd like to hear Lord cover this. I think that would be that'd be a big hit, I bet.
Yeah, Lord would be a good hit. Yeah, she would be a good
hit. I like it when kids on the internet cover my songs. Like, sometimes if you go on YouTube, little kids, you know, like kids who are 10, 11, 12, 13, there are videos of them learning the songs, and that's really cool because I was a kid that age who loved music. So, but of course, the internet has made it so you can end up seeing those things.
Right.
Right. That's the teacher in you speaking, by the way, liking to see those young kids doing it. It's a pleasure to meet you both, Suzzy Roach and Lucy Wainwright. Do it.
You were close.
Lucy Wainwright Roach. You know, if I look at it, I'll screw it up. Enjoy your time in Chicago. Enjoy the sights because your show's tomorrow night at the City Winery, 8 p.m. start. It is a pleasure and an honor to meet both of you.
Oh, thank you. So
thanks
for having
ladies.
Me.
Thanks, ladies. Sound great. We'll take a quick break, then some news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. He comes by every Monday, and we just talk about whatever's on his mind. And today, what seems to be on your mind, if I'm reading it correctly, you are watching out the window on Pioneer Court as a giant Abe Lincoln, much larger than the real Lincoln, is being dismantled and moved to Peoria.
We don't know exactly how large the real Lincoln was because
there's no record.
There's no record of that. But no, it's called Return Visit. It's this big piece of kitsch.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's been sitting out there in Pioneer Court for about a year now.
I think about a year.
And
yeah.
Baffling all of us by exactly what it's Lincoln, obviously,
and Perry Como,
and or Bruce Wolf is who it's
or Bob from Sesame Street.
Oh,
he looks
yeah.
like all those guys.
Yeah, he's just like this sort of.
It's supposed to be your everyman.
Normal everyman. White
who
guy
has that sweater in 2017?
I know. And it's just strange. And what is the idea? That
it's supposed to be Abe Lincoln giving him directions or something.
I
like
heard
how to get...
this morning, it's been here a year, I heard Steve Grzanich report that he's holding the Gettysburg Address. Did you know that? Because I just learned that today as it's coming down.
I did
down.
Not know that.
I
no.
did know that.
I thought he was holding the Constitution.
Oh, is it?
No.
I thought that's what it was supposed
Battle
to be.
Battle of the Newscasters.
Now, did you like the Marilyn Monroe?
Yes.
I did, too. I thought that was very interesting.
You know what I
when
liked
he's
about
making
it?
Face. Because you could
it
get
it. It gave the opportunity of people from all walks of life and all different countries the chance to look up her dress. Because on a daily basis, you saw people doing exactly that.
It was remarkable. It was like people sort of understood what it was. And then before that, it was the American Gothic, right?
Grant Wood, yeah.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. The,
I would have liked to have seen
the pitchfork.
That.
And that, and by the way, tell me who those two people are. What's their
Louis
relationship?
C.K.
It's not Louis C.K. It looks like
it
looks like Louis C.K. What's the relationship of those two people?
They have to be husband and wife.
Mother
They're
and son.
Not. Yeah, it's mother and son.
Mother and son.
But every to look at them, you would automatically go, well, that's a married couple, right? But no, it's older mother and her much older son. I don't know how that happened, but it did.
They had babies young back then.
I guess so.
So... But those were both kind of cool and interesting. People got them. I think people never really got this sculpture, and I'm just hoping that whatever they replace it with is something that's a little bit more
accessible. Who deserves the next statue in Pioneer Court? Who should it be?
That sounds like a question for the listening audience.
Mm.
I would hate to impose my views on something like
that.
I
go Schwarber.
Schwarbs.
A giant statue of Schwarber that turns out to be the actual size that Schwarber is. I think that would be perfect.
It could be sports. It's never been sports.
It's probably going to be a giant apple because the Apple store is going to open right there. A giant laptop.
But sadly.
Oh, a mouse. A big mouse would be good.
Yeah.
That's funny. Like an actual mouse or a computer mouse?
A computer mouse.
Or how about an actual mouse? And people really mess with people's minds.
Oh, I like that too.
There you go. Sadly, we're not going to be here to see it probably because you guys are moving across the river and we're moving all further down the river. The editorial part of the Tribune is moving to the Prudential Building.
Oh, is that a definite? I didn't know if that was a definite.
No, it's not definite, but it's all the reporting is that that's where we're going to be moving. So out of the Tribune Tower, it's going
to
be quite a
You're going to have to leave 40 seconds earlier for work every day.
Yeah.
It's going to take an extra 40 seconds to get there.
Well, I was talking to to Todd Manley down in the locker room the other day, and he said, well, you know, it's just a short walk in the Pedway for you to get from
yeah.
the... So you can
it's
still,
easy.
So you can still see Bill and Wendy.
It's
said,
very
I
easy.
Sure hope so.
We'll figure out a way for that to happen. Lisa Madigan announced late last week that this is the end. She's not going to run for office anymore. She doesn't want the job anymore. What happened there, do you
That's
think?
That's a surprise,
Nobody
too,
saw this
it?
Coming.
It was a huge surprise. Lisa Madigan, of course, is the Attorney General, and she's been the Attorney General since 2000. I think she was elected in 2002, sworn in early 2003, I think. But anyway, for a long time.
Yeah.
And, of course, she's the daughter of Mike Madigan, who's the mm-hmm. powerful veteran Speaker of the House in Illinois. And that was a bit of an issue when she was first running, and it's been a little bit of an issue every time she's run for re-election. You know, do you want that much power concentrated in one family? Nobody I know saw this coming at all. In fact, she had signaled to most of us that she was going to run for re-election. I think she'd even said she was going to run for re-election. It was.
Should we be nervous? Is there something going on that we're not
well,
aware of?
You know, it's immediately everybody started speculating what it was. And I was in the middle of writing my column for Sunday, and I thought, well, I should jump in and irresponsibly speculate because,
yeah.
you know, why
That's
not?
That's what people do.
That's what I do. But I had nothing other than just wild guesses about what was really going on. And here's my thought, and I've yet to confirm this, and people think that it's kind of crazy, but I think that Lisa Madigan doesn't particularly want to be governor of Illinois, because really, who would, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, what a nutty job. Mm-hmm. That she may not want to go to Washington to be a United States senator, which is the other thing people talk about for her, that she may not want to be the mayor of Chicago. I mean, just because she comes from a powerful political family and has shown some political ambition in the past doesn't mean that her ambition is all-consuming.
Right.
She is maybe more of a normal person than most politicians are, than the hunger for power does not burn within her. And she has stepped back. People have asked her. I have asked her to run for higher office in my column. I think she's been a very competent attorney general. She gets more votes than any other politician. Jesse White used to be the one who did that, but now it's Lisa Madigan. She's the most powerful politician in the state.
Ryan Burrow has a question for you, Eric. So.
Is it possible that she just wants to go and make some money? I mean, isn't that kind of how it works with a lot of these politicians? They do their service and they get offers, and an offer you can't refuse, maybe in the private sector?
What do you think? Is that a chance, Eric, that she just wants to find some job that pays a little better?
Sure, I think that's a real possibility. Another possibility that I heard floated, but I'm not sure I believe, which is that she is in line for a Supreme Court seat, Illinois Supreme Court seat, and that Justice Ann Burke, who would step aside, and that they would somehow ease her into that role. I don't know that that's true. She's denied to us that she's interested in becoming a judge. She says they sit all day, and she didn't want to sit all day.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I think it's quite possible that she wants to go into private business. She's an attorney. She could go and join a law firm, I think she makes about $150,000 a year this year. Plus tips, plus a pension.
Right.
But still, I mean, you can make a lot more than that as an attorney, as a named partner or a partner at a high-powered Chicago firm. She could do that.
I would have expected the other Madigan to step down before her, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, I mean, the talk was several years ago, I think it was before the 2016 election, the one that where Bruce Rauner ran, that she was going to run, and she decided not to because her father did not want to step down from being the Speaker of the House, and she realized at that point that wasn't going to work, that voters were probably not going to want to have the governor and the Speaker of the House be from the same family.
Right.
Now, you know, I believe that, although I'm not sure that she wasn't a little relieved to that, and I think that if she had really wanted that her father probably would have stepped down for her. I mean, if you remember back in 2002 when she ran for attorney general, she was running against John Schmidt, who was a former U.S. attorney. He was a very powerful, very well-regarded legal person.
Yeah.
And she was a young state senator, not a lot of experience, no experience aside from that state senator in elected office or administrative office. And her father really just—he willed her to win, you know, with all the political muscle that he has. And at the time, I was complaining about it. I said, "What is this? This isn't right. This is too much nepotism." But again, I think over the years, I felt that she has done a very creditable job as the attorney general. She hasn't been as aggressive about political corruption as maybe she could have been. But that office of Illinois attorney general has never been particularly active in investigating political corruption. So, you know, like I say, it might be that Lisa Madigan just, you know, she wants to
try something else.
She's tired of the, you know,
you can understand
the crap fest that is Springfield and
right.
and just wants to do something else. She's in her early, I think 51, I think is her age.
Yeah.
And she's got a couple of young kids, and she's like a normal person. I see her around. She's a Northwest Sider like I am. I see her at the Old Town School sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, she's just like, I just want to be more of a normal person. And that seems possible to me. And a lot of people say, like, how can that possibly be? She's a politician. They're all consumed with ambitions. But you remember when Blagojevich, Governor Blagojevich, was scheming about the
dark-haired Blagojevich or silver-haired Blagojevich?
Dark-haired
Blagojevich.
I prefer the silver-haired one. If you're asking which looks better,
people were saying that
he looked great.
He looked very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why. And the really jet black hair on a man of his age wasn't really working.
It works for Elvis.
Sure. Well, but Elvis was 43, right? Well, when he died, something like that. I mean, I don't know.
What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say that Blagojevich was purportedly dangling the U.S. Senate seat in front of the Madigan family. Say, look, I'll appoint Lisa Madigan. And then he was asking Mike Madigan to grease the way with just some legislation that he wanted. Hmm. And I think that if Lisa Madigan had really wanted that, and if that offer had ever been conveyed to her or had been conveyed to Mike Madigan, and it's unclear, you know, exactly what had happened there, but it looked to a lot of people like that office was there for the taking, and she certainly could have run. I mean, when Roland Burris was then appointed, then there was a great opportunity for her then to run, because Roland Burris, his appointment was so controversial and blah blah blah. So you could have Lisa Madigan. That was a great chance for her to run, and I think she would have had no trouble winning the Senate seat. She didn't want it.
Right.
Again, with governor, with mayor, all these things, people keep saying Lisa Madigan. And she has not shown it. And I'm not saying that. I'm saying that maybe it's a good thing. And maybe she's like, hey, she's more like the rest of us. Like, who'd want that job?
Right, exactly.
So it seems possible. And, of course, now if you want to, we can talk about what this has done. Of course, it's thrown things open to who's going to
Let's look at that next. We'll do that in just a little bit. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is the best way. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about a bunch of things. Oh, number one, before we forget, we were talking about how for a while there was a giant statue of American Gothic. That's the Grant Wood painting out in Pioneer Court to our left, south of us. And I thought, most people think that it's a husband and wife, a middle America husband and wife. But I said, no, it turns out it's a father and his daughter, mother and
we
son?
We both said mother and son. But
it's father and daughter?
Yes.
Is that right? All right. I stand corrected. Sorry, Grant Wood, if you're listening.
By the way, every man has been removed, but he still stands. If they place every man on top of Abraham Lincoln, it could look like every man destroyed Abraham Lincoln right now.
I hope that doesn't happen, Ryan.
Or is in love with him.
Yes.
I don't like that they're putting the giant crane rope around his neck. It just looks very bad to me. They should put it under his arms or something. It's just making
me
nervous.
The arms could snap, though, if they did that.
He's swaying now.
Yeah, just like every man.
This should be live. You guys should go commercial free until this thing comes down.
Hey, isn't that the Booth School, by the way, right next to it? I don't know if you want to put Lincoln next to Booth.
Oh yeah,
the Chicago
that's awkward.
Booth.
That's bad. All right,
too soon.
too soon. Thanks, Ryan. All right, last night's Emmys, Wendy and I mentioned this at the beginning. Had a surprise guest during the monologue that some people feel a little uneasy about.
Right. Well, Sean Spicer comes out.
Yeah,
right?
Sean Spicer.
At some point, Stephen Colbert is musing about, a lot of people are watching this, but we'll never know how many people are watching this. Does anybody know? And then he turns stage left and says, Sean, can you tell me? And Spicer wheels out on that mobile
the Saturday Night Live podium.
And he says, you know, this is the biggest crowd ever to watch an Emmys in the entire history of the world.
Both live and on television.
Period.
And
I thought it was a very funny moment.
Although the ratings did not depict that. The ratings were very down.
Oh, they were?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the ratings were down a little bit. So people are saying, let's not humanize Sean Spicer. Don't make him part of it.
Don't normalize him. Yeah. My social media feed went crazy. You know, I have a very liberal social media feed.
Who cares? I mean, why did they go crazy?
They were saying that you know, you have this guy. I mean, that it's not, in some ways it's not funny.
Because you let the enemy in.
That you've got this guy who was up there just lying for the president, and he did it for months, and now we're all laughing about it, about what a liar he was. My point is that the fact that he is going out and making jokes about it acknowledges that he was lying, and it makes Trump the butt of the joke, not the public. I mean, that Spicer has become the joke, and that this is sort of a formal acknowledgement from him coming on.
What has happened to everybody? Lighten up, Francis.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought, too. I thought that the joke was at the expense of Donald Trump and Sean Spicer, and, you know, this is what we've been doing for months.
Sean Spicer realized that when he got the call from whoever called him and asked him if he wanted to do it, he knew he was the punchline to a joke, and he went along with it. He said, yeah, if that's what it takes, I'll do it. Why not?
Sure, and he did Jimmy Kimmel last week, I think, and he's sort of making the rounds. I think he's going to write a book.
Yeah.
But clearly, for him to go on, I mean, he was mocking himself and mocking the president for the kinds of lies that he was telling from that podium. He was acknowledging the humor and the sort of the essential truth that underlay that Saturday Night Live sketch that Melissa McCarthy did when she was playing him.
Her face was priceless when he actually came out. She almost looked a little embarrassed, proud. It was like just weird faces coming from
and
her.
And then, of course, Colbert points to Sean Spicer and says, "Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Melissa McCarthy."
Yeah, that was great.
There was a lot of Trump bashing on that show last night.
A little too much for my personal taste.
I liked it when Alec Baldwin accepted the award and he said, "Mr. President, by the way, here's your Emmy."
It was good.
You're going to get. So, it was fun.
That's Eric Zorn. He's in the Chicago Tribune. You should read him. You'll learn things.
Yeah. Exactly.
Thanks, Eric. We'll take a quick break and then find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.